Hi, this is Mark Cuniberti. You're about to listen to another edition of our award-winning economic show entitled Money Matters. The information given on this show is obtained from a variety of public sources and is deemed accurate at time of airing but is not guaranteed. This show is pre-recorded at an earlier date, so market indices and related stock market references may not be accurate at time of airing, and we will not be taking any listener call-ins. Thanks again for listening. Now enjoy the show. And welcome, welcome to another edition of Money Matters. My name's Mark Cuniberti. Thanks for joining me today on your community radio station. Lots of good stuff in today's show. We'll cover a little bit on Brexit, the markets, their current markets, government's neat trick, and applying for tax credits, and what is a bond? We've covered that many times. And also some information on retirement accounts, so stay tuned. Right here to Money Matters. But before we begin, please be advised that discussions in the show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I am an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. The views expressed are my opinions only. They do not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge, this station, its staff members, or underwriters. Today's show is edition 249, entitled April Fools or Geniuses, and Money Matters is about money. As money does matter and matters, money affects us all in some way or another, whether you have a lot of it, a little of it, or none of it. It controls our economy, our country, our planet, and in some way or another controls the very way you live your life. And it's about your money, your lack of it or abundance of it. It's about your life, your livelihood. In short, Money Matters is about, you guessed it, you. And again, once again, thanks for joining me today. My name's Mark. And as always, we take a look at the Dow 30 industrial stocks, constructed by Charles Dow many, many decades ago. There are many more stocks in the Dow, but the Dow 30 just holds, 30 of the most influential regarded at the day. The only stock left in the original Dow 30 is General Electric. The rest have been rotated out. And we see additions and subtractions from the Dow 30. Once they take one out, they put a new one in. General Electric, been plowing along, been there for a long time. Dow 30 at 20,667.30. That's at 12:32 p.m. Thursday, April 6, 2017, in the year of our Lord. This show is also pre-recorded and it is live at this minute at 12:12 p.m. on Thursday, but it is played on other stations at different times. So the indices quoted may not be accurate at the time you hear the show, but the information would, of course, be still applicable. So thank you. So start every show, we talk about the resistance and support levels of what big numbers are on the Dow. There are many other indexes. People look at the NASDAQ and the S&P and the Russell and emerging markets, but the Dow 30 is what usually the big major media outlets will cover. And the big number is 20,000, 21,000, 22,000, 19,000. Those are big numbers, multiples of 1,000. Those numbers are like milestones. It's like when you climb Mount Everest, you come to the Hillary Step, right? Or the Khumbu Ice Falls. Those are, yes, I do watch KVIE. Yes, I do watch public television. So when you come to the Hillary Step or the Khumbu Ice Falls, those are milestones. We're at Camp 1, Camp 2, Camp 3. Well, on the Dow, these big 1,000-point numbers are milestones. They're not all the milestones that technicians look at, but they are big ones. And when they go below 20,000, let's say we're looking at Dow in the 19,000 range, then let's say it's 19,500 on some particular day. The 20,000 mark would be a resistance level. We deem that as a resistance point. Might be a little harder to get through 20,000 and on into the 20,000s. If you're at 19,500, then you actually look at the 19,000 level as a resistance point, right? Or support. I keep getting that wrong. So if you're at 19,005 and And it's going to go down through 19,000. That's a support level. And if you're at 19,005 and it wants to go up, that's a resistance level. Okay, so support is below. Resistance is above. Support is like a floor. Resistance is like a ceiling. I always had a big laugh, you know, when Hillary and Trump were running against each other. Hillary had been in a hotel and they'd put a glass panels in the ceiling to when she was elected president. Of course, that meant that, you know, we're breaking through this glass ceiling. And of course, glass ceiling stayed intact, didn't it? And so I guess they had to take down all those glass panels. But in any case, so here we are at 20,671. We've been kind of churning around sideways for a while. Once we got through, you know, I think when Donald Trump got the go light on November 8th, the evening of November 8th, the Dow was sitting, if my memory recalls, which is doubtful these days, you know, I just don't know. But I think it was sitting around 17,001, if my memory serves. Could be wrong, but I think that's what it was. I could look, but then you'd have to hear me clunking around on a mouse, and that's not good radio. So it went 17,001, 18,001, 19,001, 20,001. Well, that's 3,000 points. 18, yeah, 3,000 points, I think. Yeah, about 3,500 points now. So the market apparently liked him. But now it's been churning around a little bit. You know, it's been kind of going sideways. And, of course, you know, we hear the typical market pundits, cheerleaders, and naysayers. The market's going to go further, and the market's going to fall, or it's getting overextended, it's very expensive, it's due for a fall, or it's going to go up, and this is just the beginning. You know, what do you hear, right? I get people send me articles saying, hey, should I sell? Because this article says the world's going to collapse. And then other people will call me and say, are we allocated? Are we in? The market's going to go to 30,000. So we see both sides. So for every 10 articles somebody shows me that the market's going to go down, I could show you 10 to convince you the market's going to go up. Nobody really knows. So we are at 20,600. It has been like going sideways kind of, right? Churning around. And it is general belief that the more the market kind of bounces around in a straight line, the longer it does that, the bigger the break will eventually be. Okay, it's not set in stone. But usually we say if it bounces around, it bounces around for a long time. Long time could be, well, that's all relative, right? It could be a week, a month, a year, 5 years, or whatever. I don't think it's ever bounced around for 5 years. I think in the 70s it may have. But then it means that when it does break, it's going to break hard. And so, you know, it's hard to tell, you know, where this thing's going to go. It's been kind of flat. You know, our portfolios, at least the ones that we handle, is just kind of, you know, just kind of meandering. We'll see what'll happen, you know. We'll see what will happen. If there's any big things coming up, I don't think anything on my radar is going to move this market one way or the other. Coming up close, you know, like a Fed meeting or anything like that. So we're going to see some financials start to post some earnings. Other than that, I don't see any monumental things in the future right now that are going to move it, except a general exhaustion in the market where the market will just fall because people don't want to buy anymore, or the new enthusiasm could take hold and this thing could scream up. So, like I say, who knows, you know? And I don't know either. I went to a meeting last night. Kid goes to a school. I won't mention the school. It's kind of interesting, you know, the politics in schools, you know. I've been a member of a Little League organization, and politics were rampant in there. It's just crazy, crazy, crazy. You know, little people get big positions in power and they don't want to be moved out. And it's like, dudes, this is baseball. It's for kids. Everybody's acting like it's the world domination club, you know. And school was the same way. Just a private school, and they were trying to fry somebody. The board was trying to fry somebody. And you know, the from what we saw, I'm not a judge, jury, you know, the board made some moves and wanted to dismiss somebody for some alleged improprieties. This is not a court of law. It is a private company, so they can say whatever the heck they want. So I'm not going to say anything for sure. I would just say alleged, right? Mm-hmm. Keep me out of a lawsuit. Alleged. So the board alleged that this person had done a couple of things, and they were going to dismiss this person, and had dismissed this person. And from what I gather, this person wanted to stay around and was going to fight it. And, you know, my take on that was, look, what's good for the school, for you to stay around and fight it, or just to go quietly into the night. You know, at some point you got to just give up the ghost. I had that myself, you know, with Little League, you know, just reach an impasse, and for the good of the league and the good of myself, I just said, I got to go. You know, sometimes it's just not worth it to fight. It's like the Republicans and Democrats, right? It's like, you guys want to fight and fight and fight, but is that really good for the nation? Is that really good for the nation? You know, can't we just get along instead of siding with each other and being so vile and violent and so accusatory and just downright mean? Can't we, for the good of the nation, just bury the axes and let's get along. Like Rodney King said, right? Can't we all just get along, right? I mean, so in any case. So we're here to talk about the markets today and April Fools or April Geniuses. You know, April 1st came along. I did not pull an April Fool's joke on anybody. I usually do. But I didn't, and it was weird. I just wasn't in the mood, you know. I myself avoided a near-death experience, and won't get into the details of that, but it was, in my opinion, God's hand saved me. Like it did when I was 16, I got another near-death experience, and it was a miracle that I survived. And last week, somewhere around 24th or 1st or whatever it was, amazing that I actually survived this thing. And I've just got a new lease on life. I figured, okay, my work here is not done. And I just looked forward. I wasn't even depressed about what happened, or wasn't like had bad memories about it, although it was a horrific, horrific experience. It was like, that was kind of cool because I feel a new lease on life. And so it's just, you know, I don't think I've ever been more excited and never been happier about living than I am in the last 3 weeks after being nearly wiped clean from the face of the earth. Go figure, right? A lot of people will say that. So anyway, you're listening to Money Matters on the community radio station, and we'll maybe play a little music in the background. We'll start the show. Don't know what I got scrolled up. Let's hear what I got scrolled up. SRV Stevie Ray Vaughan in the background. So you are listening to Money Matters, and I'm just going to take a quick break and be right back, about 30 seconds. And welcome back to the 249th edition of Money Matters Live. Listeners can call 530-265-9555, 530-265-9555, and answer your questions here. And, of course, those on a pre-recorded another date, then Thursday, April 6th. Then, of course, you can't call in. You know, you send me an email, and that's easy. Just send it to the program director at your radio station, and they will forward it to me. And our website, our way of saying thank you for wherever you're listening to the show, community radio station website, moneymanagementradio.com. It is a a grata website, our way of saying thank you for listening to your community radio station. So we give something back as you give something to us. So Brexit. You remember Brexit? It's coming around, you know. Let's talk a little bit about Brexit. Brexit was a term coined a few years back. And the Brexit, okay, is the combination of the word Britain and exit, Brexit. It describes UK, right, United Kingdom, process of its exit as a participating member of the European Union. Okay, we're gonna refer that as in the EU, European Union, okay? Well, what's the European Union? The EU is a partnership with 28 countries, 28 countries in this Union partnership with 28 countries in the euro area. It was established as a union to help unify those economies and the people of the member countries and allow them to operate more or less like one entity, which would allow it, you know, freedom of travel, common currency, just more, instead of like driving 20 miles and crossing a border and showing your passport and driving another 50 miles and crossing the border. And it was just ridiculous. So they said, look, why don't we just make this one big area here? 19 of the 28 members adopted or agreed to use the common currency, and the other 9 said, no, we're going to keep our own. The common currency was the euro, right? The euro dollar. Euro dollar wasn't around, you know, 30 years ago. Euro didn't even exist. So the union does have, this European Union has a single parliament, right, where certain rules are set that apply to all, which include, okay, certain rules are set, include, but do not, are not limited to transport, economic regulation, consumer rights and environment, and also coming and going between the countries. Being a voluntary union, it's voluntary, right? They didn't force you to go in there like Nazi Germany forced you to become part of Germany, or Russia annexed, you know, the whatever they annexed. A country could vote to be in it, and they could also vote to leave. They could vote to leave. And the UK voted to leave in June of 2016, the first one to vote to take off. The vote, when the vote was counted, nobody expected them to vote to leave, but when it was actually established that the referendum had won, they were going to leave. It caused a temporary downdraft in the markets worldwide. Uncertainty. Marx didn't know what it meant. Never seen this before, you know? Never seen this. Euro's a big area, big manufacturing block. It's a big currency base. You know, all of a sudden, wow, one of these guys is leaving. Just think of, like, California, one is seceding from the nation, right? It's a big thing. And so the markets were uncertain what it would do. You know, we don't know. And when market participants get a little nervous, they do what? They usually hit the sell button. I'm out of here. You know, I don't like stocks. Stocks could drop because other people could get nervous. And other people think, oh, the stocks could drop because other people could get nervous. So somebody gets nervous and they sell and stocks drop. So it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Now, in June 2016, of course, now we are coming around to approaching, March, April, May of 2017. So the clock has been ticking, right? Clock has been ticking. And now there's a two-year, you know, window once you vote to leave. You know, you got to kind of finish up in 2 years. The clock has been ticking, and now it's time for the UK to take the next step if this thing is really going to happen. A lot of people thought, well, they're going to vote to leave, but then they thought, nah, it'll never really happen. But so far, I mean, it looks like they're going to continue. There have been doubters that the UK would actually go through with it, but now, of course, the UK finds themselves at a spot where the proverbial rubber meets the road. They have to take the next step. They just can't wait till the last minute. There's a lot to be done. The actual mechanics of how a country leaves the EU is detailed in a document named Article 50, not to be confused with Area 51 that contains Martians. Okay, Article 50 is an article of the original Treaty of Lisbon, which was ratified in 2009 by all the EU states there at the time. So the time frame spelled out in this Article 50, how to leave, you know, most people say, you know, there's the door, get the hell out, right? When the father comes in and you're with daughter in the room, you know, it's like, hey, go. Well, in the EU, they say the time frame is 24 months from the vote. They put the deadline on or about June of 2018. Of course, that date is approaching fast, you know. I mean, it's just a little while ago where I thought my kids were going to play on the playground that I was repairing, which I really don't know how to do. I just kind of went out there and hit it with a hammer and said, there, that's better. I don't think I even used any nails. I just kind of walked around and hit it. The wife thought, oh, Mark's working on the playground. Yeah, I'm working on it. Wham, wham, wham. Yes, yeah, get better. How'd you do, Mark? Great. It's a lot better shape now. I strengthened it. Nah, it didn't do anything. I just kind of faked it. So anyway, and now, of course, my kids don't play on it. They haven't played on it in 10 years. So time moves fast. And of course, here we are. The time is moving fast and the actual exit date is approaching. So there, here we are. Now, extension is maybe possible, but many expect that if the UK, if the Brexit does actually happen, it will be completed by 2019, to the summer of 2019. Remember, keep in mind, this is the first time an EU member has decided to leave. In other words, no one has ever left before. We are in uncharted territory. We do not know what is going to happen. How will this affect everything? To grasp the magnitude of what lies ahead, both in policy, right? Just think of all the policy that has to be undertaken and the paperwork. Holy mackerel. Imagine California deciding to secede from the Uncle Sam. I mean, that would be a monumental thing. How do you do such a thing? Never been done. The task is monumental on all fronts, to be sure. There are, of course, I mean, since anything could be done by Parliament or anybody, you know, anybody can change the rules on any time. If they're up there, like Congress can change the rules on you anytime they want. And an executive order can be undone by another executive order, which is kind of weird in my mind. But anyway, there are variations of an exit, of course, I think that could be negotiated, right? Basically, could say, well, let's do a partial exit, or let's just exit this part of the economy or that part of the treaty. They have been called a hard or soft exit. Hard exit all the way. Soft exit, kind of maybe leaving one foot out the door sort of thing. It would mean different things to different things. Different things to different things. Policies, people, and any hybrid of possibility could be conjured up of an exit or a Brexit as regulators and government officials stumble along a path that's never before been traveled. They've never done it before. This is all new. How do we get out once we're in? How do you extricate a country from such an involved union? Things like immigration, import, exports, tariffs, taxes, treaties, security, stock and bond markets, and the instruments that they are represented by, the financial instruments. Everything's up for discussion and everything's up for grabs, obviously. Since the whole process is in uncharted territory for everybody, right? There's nobody that could say, well, I did it before, so I know. No, nobody's done it. No one can say what the financial markets will do. How will they react? What the economies and even the general welfare of the people in the UK and surrounding them will fare. Nobody knows what will happen. So some people are saying it's going to be the end of the world. Other people are saying, nah, no big deal. The ramifications could possibly, obviously, as they did when the financial markets reacted negatively briefly, the ramifications could, not would or should, but could encompass the entire civilized world in a number of ways. Hopefully none of them catastrophically. Economically speaking, markets do hate uncertainty. I think that one can be etched in the proverbial piece of granite. Markets don't like uncertainty. And when we say markets don't like uncertainty, we are really referring to the players in the market, also known as the investors. And when uncertainty abounds, both during and after such an historical event, nobody knows if the markets will just flatline, stay calm, or whether they will throw a hissy fit. There's always an outside chance after looking at the task ahead. The people involved in negotiating the Brexit could just decide, nah, we're not going to do this. Or it could be negotiated into another breed of autonomy, right? Or canceled altogether. But it appears now, it looks like, so far, it's full speed ahead. We'll be right back with this edition of Money Matters. Stay tuned.
We're in the money. We're in the money. We've got a lot of what it takes to get along. We're in the money. The skies are sunny. Old Man Depression, you are through. You've done us wrong. We never see a headline but a red line today. And when we see the landlord, we can let that guy right in the eye. We're in the money.
Are you in the money? Are we in the money? I don't know.
I don't know a lot of people that are in the money, right?
My name's Mark Cuniberti. Thanks for joining me on your community radio station. Another edition of Money Matters, Money Matters Edition 249. Thanks for listening. And comments on the show can be directed to the program director at your station. And, of course, visit the website of your community radio station and see what's going on. And, of course, you can offer your support as far as volunteering or what have you, any sorts of number of ways you can volunteer to support your community radio station and, you know, help the community around you. And, you know, a community radio station, there's a lot of events going on, you know. You can go and enjoy the entertainment, and a central hub of a community usually is the community radio station, right? We know what's going on. We can tell you what's going on. We're kind of the hub of all the little spokes. So if you ever move into a town or come into a town and you're visiting this area or you're visiting that area or you're just kind of wondering, you're sitting around this weekend, you don't know what to do, you know, you can log on to community radio station. Ours is kvmr.org. That's where we are, of course, KVMR FM in Nevada City, California. But, of course, if you're listening to another station, log on to your community radio station, and you can find ways you can help, support, questions answered, programming, all fine things of the people that work at the station. And so, yeah, the website, community radio station website, is a great resource for knowing what's going on in your community. So I'd gotten in a discussion at the gym with this gentleman who was on opposing sides of me on the machine, not on the political aisle, but on the machine. And we got on to government and manipulations and things of this. And I had this conversation with him. I said, you know, I said, governments have a neat trick. Well, they actually have many neat tricks. And he said, what do you mean? I said, well, these neat tricks are kind of ways they kind of convince you to do things. And he said, well, why do they do that? And I said, well, they usually do it to garner money from you. And governments need money, right? And they usually do it in the name of the greater good, right? It's good for the country. It's good for America. It's good for General Motors. What's good for General Motors is good for America. Now, here's some examples. Remember during the economic crisis of 08 and 09, what did all the advertisements start to say? Go out. I remember they said, go out and buy an SUV. That was one specific one. Go out and buy an SUV. I don't know if it was a specific ad, but it was definitely put out in the media. They also said, take a trip to Disneyland. Take your family to Disneyland to help the recovery. But Disney loved that, right? Now, what was the message here? What was the message? The message was to go out and spend money to help the economy. That's what it was. So they're saying, go out and spend money to help the balance sheet of the United States. Now, one would ask, how does spending help your balance sheet? If your balance sheet needs help at home, do I come over there and say, your balance sheet is in trouble? Go out and spend. Now, didn't our parents tell us to save money in order to be financially intelligent? Financially sound, you save your money. However, if you go out and spend money on an SUV or fly to Anaheim to go to Disneyland, you pay more in taxes, right? And who do you think gets those taxes? The same ones that told you to go out and buy an SUV or go to Disneyland. Another age-old trick, and I covered this long time ago, I'll cover it one more time. Another age-old trick is getting you to vote against your own tax cuts. Getting you to vote against your own tax cuts. Don't remember doing that? Don't remember doing that? Ah! This one is an old trick, and they do it all the time. I've actually voted against my own tax cuts on occasion. But this is the con. You got to appreciate a good con. I keep saying that. This one takes place when tax cuts are proposed. We're going to cut taxes, and we're all going to vote on this. Now, usually tax cuts are cuts across the board. Everybody gets a tax cut, right? Then the choir comes forth. And what they do is they convince you that the next guy is going to get more of a tax cut than you. And that's said by tax cuts for the rich. The one is labeled tax cuts for the rich. The tax cuts are across the board. It's true. You'll get a tax cut, and the wealthy will get a tax cut. But because the wealthy will also get a tax cut,
The rich will also save more money than you. They will. They won't pay as much taxes as you, because if you're paying 15% of 10 grand, you pay what? 1,500. You save 1,500 if we eliminate your taxes. If you're making $1 million and you pay 15%, you're paying 150 grand. So if I give you each, cut your taxes in half, right? You'll save 750, which is half of 1,500, but the rich save 75,000 because he's paying 150. So they say, well, look, he's going to save much more money than you, so you should vote against this tax cut for the rich, tax cut for the rich. So you do. A lot of people vote against the tax cut for the rich. But in essence, what they've done is they've also voted against your tax cut, your own tax cut. That's a pretty neat trick. How about schemes to protect American business? Cars. Let's take cars, right? The auto industry. The government applies heavy tariffs on imported cars, if you don't know. This makes American cars more competitive. If it weren't for those heavy taxes on imported auto prices, even more would probably flock to foreign car lots. Thousands of dollars are garnered at the border for each and every import car that comes across. American cars made here don't pay the tax. Cars made here don't pay the taxes and not coming across. So the cars made here are thousands of dollars cheaper because they don't have to pay the tariff or the tax. In actuality, if there was no tariff or tax, foreign cars would actually be a lot cheaper. But the taxes bring them up to the prices charged equal to American cars. So they're about equal, right? So if it wasn't for the tariffs, the foreign cars would probably be a lot cheaper than American cars. If you look at, you know, quality versus quality and extras versus extras. The program does force more Americans to buy American cars due to price. Because if American cars were more expensive, they'd buy less cars. But who gets the tariff? Uncle Sam. They get the tariff. Doesn't help you at all. You end up paying more for a Toyota if you want to buy a Toyota. If it was really about protecting our car companies and boosting the economy, because they say, well, we've got to protect the car companies to boost the economy, then why wouldn't they give you a tax credit for buying an American car? In other words, you don't pay any more for a foreign car, but you get a tax break if you buy an American car. That way, the government doesn't get that tariff. You save money by buying an American car. So the end result, the end behavior that they're trying to modify would be the same. And consumers would also have more money to spend in their pocket because they got money instead of paying more. It'd be the same thing. So if it was about protecting American car companies and about boosting the economy, you could do a tax credit instead of a tariff and accomplish more than if just you had a tariff. If you did a tax credit, you'd still have the incentive to buy an American car, but you'd also have more money in your pocket to spend to boost the economy, which is what they say they're trying to do. Tax credits would help more people and more economy, more of our economy, as it puts money in the pocket, yet the tariffs remain. You don't think they haven't figured out that they could give a tax credit for buying an American car? Then they'd lose the tax. How about when gasoline spikes? You hear when gasoline spikes, Washington points fingers at greedy oil companies. It's your greedy oil companies. Let's get all the oil execs and sit them down in front of Congress and find out how they're gouging the American people. Right? And then they convince you through media bombardment, through the mantra, you know, what's that guy, Goebbels, the Nazi Goebbels, said if you want the public to believe something, you get a very simple statement and you repeat it over and over. Tax the rich or greedy oil companies. That's three words, greedy oil companies. You keep saying it over and over. Through constant media bombardment, if you say it enough, people believe it. So we hear that the government is so concerned about the prices that working families pay to fill their tanks. The greedy oil companies are making it very difficult for working families to fill their gas tanks and go to work. Yet, did you ever hear mention about the federal gasoline taxes on each gallon that the feds take? They're exorbitant. And the state taxes on gasoline. And did you ever say, well, we're worried about how much money it costs for the working families to fill the gas tanks. But there's no ever mention about, well, let's do away with the federal gasoline tax or part of it, or the state tax or part of it, to help working families. No, it's all about, let's keep our taxes but force the oil companies to reduce theirs. It's always about the greed of the oil companies. And one could ask, what about the greed of Washington? I'm not saying that Washington is greedy, and I'm not saying the oil companies are greedy, but that's what you've been told. Seems to me that's sort of a credit. Reducing federal taxes puts more money in people's pocket. If they're worried about working families, you put more money in their pocket, they could feed their kids. I'm a board of directors at the local food bank here. We send out 12,000 meals a month to every school in the county. 12,000 snacks to kids. And we get letters from the kids, some of them saying, thank you for the food. If I didn't get this snack, I would be hungry. I mean, wow. Wow. It's heartbreaking. So the idea of adding taxes in lieu of tax credits runs a gamut when it comes to government addressing the issues of the day. Pollution fines instead of incentives, fuel and tobacco taxes instead of credits, you name it, fines and taxes are used instead of credits. Rarely, if ever, tax credits used, which would have a similar effect on the desired outcome while boosting our economy. They say, well, people are cheating on taxes by buying interstate, I forgot what that was, and not paying sales tax. So they're after people to pay sales tax interstate because they're cheating. They're cheating. They're not paying sales tax. Nobody ever says, well, wait a minute, you want more tax, right? State of California is boosting the auto registration tax. They want more of your money. It's only like a couple of bucks, but hey, it all adds up. Everybody adds a couple of bucks on there, right? Tax credits and other monetary incentives in favor of the consumer would have the same effect on the behavior modification desired, but it would stimulate the economy as consumers would have more money to spend and starve the beast, right? The only difference between tax credits and taxes is tax credits go in our pocket. Taxes, fines, and tariffs go in theirs. We'll be right back with more Money Matters.
Sunday morning ever, and Sunday passing by. I'll be working here forever, at least until I die. Damn if you do, damn if you don't. I'm supposed to get a raise next week, you know damn well I won't. Working for a living, working, working for a living.
And welcome back to the final segment of Money Matters. Huey Lewis in the background. Many investors own bonds. And if you listen to this show, I know you know what a bond is, but many investors don't know what it is, and it's a crime. Many investors do own bonds, but they don't understand what they are. I find the financial service industry woefully lacking in the education of investors, and I can't help to think that it's by design. After all, if clients are kept in the dark, if the public is kept in the dark, as to completely understanding the certain types of investments that are out there, the more they will think they need the guidance of a paid financial advisor, right? Before I became an advisor, I was, and still am, in the business of educating the public about investments and all things surrounding the market. That's what I do. Since bonds are one of the most widely held investments in the world, I thought, once again, it'd be prudent to cover what is a bond and what is a bond fund. Wikipedia defines bonds as, quote, an instrument of indebtedness of the bond issuer to its holders. Well, looky there. More gobbledygook to the public for sure.
What does that mean?
I know what it means. Do you know what it means? In terms easy to understand, a bond is an IOU. You loan somebody your money, and they write you an IOU. In keeping with the confusion, however, heaped upon us by the financial industry, certain types of debt can go by different names. For example, borrow money for a house. Do we call it a bond? Do we call it a mortgage? Loan your brother-in-law money, and he writes you a note. If your local township needs money, that's an IOU. It's called a bond. Loan the U.S. government some money, and they might call it a treasury note or a bill or even a bond, depending on certain criteria. There we go. We have got a half a dozen names for essentially the same thing. It's all just money lent out to somebody else. The bond is the promise. It's all just debt. Debt. Plain and simple. Own a bond in your portfolio. Own a bond in your portfolio, and you will hold an IOU from a single entity, generally. Own a bond fund, and you own a basket of IOUs. Bonds are generally held for their income, interest payments, and perceived relative safety when compared to stocks. They also have a tendency to move opposite to the stock market, which is the common belief, which is why people might prefer to hold them. They think, well, bonds and stocks move in opposite, so if one goes down, one goes up. But in actuality, neither of these correlations is etched in stone. In other words, it may not be true. What some investors may not realize is the market price, the daily price of a bond, can move up or down depending on what is happening with interest rates in general. For instance, say John Q. Public, you buy a $1,000 bond, and it says on the bond, $1,000. And you buy it from your local city. The bond says, give $1,000 to the city of Boonville, and you'll get 10% a year from the city and be paid back your $1,000 at the end of the term in 10 years. So it's a 10-year bond paying 10% a year. If the township doesn't go bankrupt, and John holds the bond until it matures in 10 years, he will get his interest and his money back. If John, however, needs to sell the bond early, okay, needs to sell it in the fifth year and it doesn't mature to the 10th year because of some unforeseen need for the money in John's home, John might get his $1,000 back, but he might get more than a grand or less than a grand if he sells it early. And that depends on the market for that bond when John decides to sell it. It's true if he holds it to the end, he will get the $1,000 plus his interest. But if he decides to sell it early, all bets are off. If interest rates in the general market have risen since John first bought the bond, John will likely get less than his $1,000. And if interest rates have fallen since he bought the bond, he will likely get more than $1,000. How much he gets for the bond, whether it's $1,000, less than $1,000, or more than $1,000, if he sells it early, depends on the interest rate move in the general market, how severe it was, how quick it was, which direction the interest rate raise or in decrease was, of course, that's direction, and how many years is left on his bond. A bond fund, however, will likely see its price move in opposite of the interest rate, and it does so on a daily basis. You look at a bond, it says $1,000 today, it'll say $1,000 tomorrow in your portfolio. If you own a bond fund, it's moving every day, usually, by a penny or a dime. It's pretty safe to say when rates rise, most types of bonds will fall in price. And when rates fall, most types of bonds will increase in price. The reason for this is sometimes difficult to grasp for many investors. If rates rise, since the bond interest that is on John's bond is fixed at whatever rate he bought it at, and rates rise, the new higher rate will be more attractive than what's printed on John's bond. So if he's got to sell it, nobody's going to buy it because it's paying less than what they could buy a new bond for, so they're going to have to discount the price of the bond. John will take a haircut. If rates fall, then John's bond is paying a higher rate than what the current interest rate would be, because rates have fallen now, investors will pay more for John's bond than when he bought it, netting him profit on the early sale of his bond. Bonds are a common holding in many portfolios, but the knowledge of how these bonds work is not so common, and I know I see it all the time. Knowing exactly how bonds function is tantamount to being an informed investor. You're listening to Money Matters. We'll be right back to say goodbye. And you have been listening to your community radio stations. My name's Mark Cuniberti. You have been listening to Edition 249, April Fools or Geniuses. Is that what I said it was called? I think so. I'm getting old, so my mind doesn't work very well. 249. You can get the audio podcasts of the show, Agrata, at moneymanagementradio.com. There's no fees, charges, or anything. It's just our way of saying thank you for participating in your community radio station. It usually takes us about a week and a half to post a show, but all the past shows are on there, at least back a year and a half or two. I'd like to remind you that discussions on Money Matters should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I, Mark Cuniberti, am an investment advisor representative to Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. The views expressed are my opinions only. They do not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge, this station, its staff, members, or underwriters. Money Matters is about money and has been about money. I want to wish you all a great day. Seriously, have a great day. Grow, help your community, and stay healthy.